Go, entity of 212, complex.
DPS, go. Inco, go. PUS, go. Surgeon, go. Booster, go. Copy that, we have a go from you guys.
This is Talking Sound.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to the Talking Sound podcast. Chris Jordan, your host here, coming at you from Austin, Texas. Before we get started, please do not forget, Talking Sound podcast is now officially brought to you by PodcastCadet.com. If you're a fan of podcasting like I am, love podcasting, want to start up a podcast for yourself, your friends, your family, business, church, school, whatever, stop on by PodcastCadet.com today. That is literally all that we do over there. Everything from one-on-one podcast audits for people that are already in the industry and doing it to one-on-one personal instruction on how to set up a show, start a show, brand a show. We hook you up with artists, with musicians to make your music. Everything is a one-on-one consultation at podcastcadet.com. That is what we do there. Stop on by, use the code TALKING20 to get 20% off your entire cart while you're there. Once again, the website is Talking Sound Podcast, or the website is podcastcadet.com. The code you want to use is TALKING20. Our guest today on the Talking Sound Podcast is Jace Schweiger. He is the host of The Shuffle. I actually met him via a group on Facebook. He ran up against an issue that we have talked about on the show previously in a couple of different ways. And I want to go ahead and bring him on the show right now. Jace, how are you doing today?
Outstanding, sir. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you for taking the time to come on. And thank you for coming on and sharing what is quite literally for us podcasters out there, much less as a broadcast engineer, radio silence is deafening.
Yeah.
But when you're a podcaster and you're depending on a platform to be putting out your material and the world goes silent one morning and when you wake up, it's a moment of panic.
It is. It hurts. I didn't realize how much it would hurt, but I'm trying to see it as a positive. Like, okay, well, maybe it was time to take a step back and reevaluate a couple of things before we jump back into this.
Sure, sure. And I mean, you know, that is quite honestly a great way to look at it, Jace, is the fact of, you know, maybe this is a moment that I need to step back and retool the show and the way it's done, because let's kind of get into the meat of things here, because you're the host of The Shuffle.
Yes.
Or at least as of right now, host of The Shuffle. It may be rebranded, it may be changing, we aren't real sure, but give us a lowdown real quick of what The Shuffle is, what the show is about, and what brought you to create it to begin with.
Sure. So I've always found music in my life somewhere, somehow. Driving down the street, walking down the street, being on a motorcycle, whatever, there's always some kind of soundtrack in your life. I've always found that, you know, you there's a go-to playlist for an activity of some kind, and I want to get to know people better through their soundtrack of life. That's pretty much what that was. So I wanted to be able to feel what you feel when you hear it, or tell me the story of when, you know, you got into the car accident and it was your only form of transportation, so you couldn't work for a week. So, you know, you heard this particular song and you're like, oh, maybe life will get better. Something like that. And I've always enjoyed trying to understand people and get to know them better. I like to think that I'm, you know, friendly enough that people will share at least some kind of story about their life growing up. And I wanted to feel how you felt in that particular time. So I would sit there and I would interview someone. I would say, okay, well, what is it that you were listening to when you were raging? And they would say, oh, this particular song. So we'd listen to the first 30 seconds of it. And I would go, oh, you know what? Dude, I totally feel what you were raging with that. Or I can totally understand why this song could trigger that emotion. And I felt like that was a great way to get to know people and feel the feelings that they were having. And I started putting that, you know, to a recording. And it felt really good to kind of get people to open up just a little bit through a channel that we don't often talk about. You know, you might talk about your political feelings. You might talk about your religious feelings. You might talk about what your kids did over the weekend. But I always feel like some people are really particular and, you know, kind of sheltered when it comes to sharing music. And I felt that was a great gateway to get to know people.
And music really is a fantastic gateway to conversation because it's one of those that immediately emotionally ties you to somebody. You can immediately relate to topics, movies, all kinds of stuff. It really is a cross barrier conversation. That's one of the reasons I got into music, is because of all the different people that I met. So for you to be doing a show like that, it's really, number one, interesting. I myself interview a lot of artists, but at the same time, took quite a break from interviewing musicians for quite a while because every single time I would post up an episode, my YouTube would get muted.
Yep.
And it sucks. Quite literally, it was like a video of me and the musician in the studio. Like, hey, let's put the headphones on and listen to the first few seconds of your track. Mute.
It sucks, man. It sucks so bad.
It's like, do you think I don't have their permission to use their music? I'm literally asking their permission right there. And that's the thing, folks. All this stuff is algorithm driven. None of this is hitting human eyes until it gets to the point where Jace got hit with an RIA compliance issue, which is algorithmic. And once you say, hey, wait a minute, I'm going to dispute this claim, now a human gets involved. But until then, all your content got muted.
Yep.
On every platform.
Every one of them. And it sucks.
Before any human's ears ever touched it. And go ahead.
I was just going to say, part of the concern that I have is that because I unfortunately made the huge mistake of not following your instructions and having a way to RSS out to other platforms, I'm now gone off of iTunes, iHeart, Anchor, Google Podcast, Spotify, Podknife, Swoot, Playapod, Bullhorn, Podcast Republic, Pod News, Blurberry, Chartable, Listen to every one of them. And there's about a dozen more, and every single one of them is gone. I've checked the links. They're all gone.
Wow. And removed or just muted?
Oh, no. It pulls up a 404.
Whoa. And for those who don't know, like a 404 error basically means like this page does not exist.
Does not exist.
And as someone who designs his own websites and does most of his own database and everything, I'm here to tell you, you got about 48 to 72 hours on most servers with that 404 error there. Now they've probably taken your page and just made it private, you know, until that's settled, and then they can just bring it back live. I hope. But like we said in our conversation privately yesterday, that's really a platform by platform decision. Like you have to go to every single platform. And even if you're going to relaunch under the same name, you have to go and cancel the subscription, restart it. Oh my God. Just so many issues revolve around this one thing.
Yeah.
And the arguments I have heard and rightfully so, folks, are of course, not necessarily the intellectual property is a problem, but most of the arguments I've heard from people are, oh, well, it's fair use. It's like, yeah, that's a hard line to draw. And in order for it to technically be fair use, you have to be using it for some sort of absolute educational purposes.
Yeah, that I would say that, yeah, or like a critique of some kind.
Even as a critique, that's not necessarily educational purpose. At that point, it's really more like if it was used like in part of a news segment talking about something where they're literally not trying to make money off of it, but to, you know, like, it's tough because even talking to somebody about how and why they made the music, it doesn't necessarily keep it out of the realm of intellectual property. And it's strange. It's a really weird ruling. It's a really odd rule. Like, even as an ASCAP BMI registered musician in composition house, you know, because, yeah, I want people to critique and do my music and stuff. But hey, which, like, if you were on a major radio station, even most online stations have to pay for the digital royalties, ASCAP, BMI, all that kind of stuff. So like you were saying, you were covered on that right by going through them first.
Right. And that's why, it's like, well, wait a second. This has been paid by, several FM radio stations that I'm on, or at least a dozen internet radio stations that I'm on, because you have to, you know, have a copy of what's being played, make sure it gets reported and all that. And then I posted the show. So I waited for them to play it first so that I know that the artist got paid. I specifically did that for 2 years. Reported the show, reported it to everybody. I would send out a mass email to a dozen people saying, these are the songs that are going to be in the shuffle this week, this, this, and this, about 30 seconds or a minute of this, whatever, so that they had coverage, they had a record of this is what's getting played and this is what will be played for how long. So that either way, if it's 5 seconds, if it's 30 seconds, somebody's going to get paid for the performance of that song.
Absolutely.
And this comes from working in radio before. I'd been a board operator and a co-host of a FM radio station. So I know everything gets reported. Everything gets logged. So I know, okay, this has to be done. And that's why I waited, because it was essentially an archive of the show at that point. And I wanted to keep a portfolio.
Well, I mean, yeah, precisely. I mean, you want to keep a copy for your own records, all that kind of stuff. And at the same time, the royalties have already been paid. And the real interesting question is that, like you said, it's not like you just started in. I'll go ahead and say it so that you don't have to be the one. It's not like you had just started distributing your show on Anchor.
No, you're right. I've been doing that for about a year.
Yeah. Yeah. So and it was actually an older episode that got the RIAA compliance hit, right?
Yep.
Which is what's interesting to me, because you would think that algorithmically, if they had a problem or anything like that, this issue would have come up long ago.
And that's what I was expecting. Okay, so if anything does come up again, I can default to, well, I'm covered under these stations, it's whatever. And I think if it wasn't for the fact of where we are right now with coronavirus and everybody getting stuck at home and working remotely, et cetera, maybe this would be responded to faster. But the problem is that I think because of where we are today, nobody's in the office. So their backlog at RIAA is behind. So they're not getting to me. And while they're not getting to me, I'm stuck.
Yeah, and that's just it. To be in the situation that you're in right now, without, like we were saying in our conversation, and even right now, it's going to be a minute or two. It's going to be a hot minute or two before you hear anything back because of the backlog due to coronavirus. And whether or not you would even be able to continue business as usual is a question that you, like you said earlier, really do have to entertain.
Yeah.
What does this do for you personally as a producer, as a talent, as somebody who's been putting this much time? I mean, even if it's a 30-minute show and you got 150 episodes, that's a lot of time.
Yeah. As of right now, I'm going to continue to focus on producing commercials, focus on putting together clips and best ofs, which I've done for several other podcasts and people that have requested it. You know, this is not my main job. Luckily, I do have
That's a plus.
Yeah. Luckily, I do have a regular job and I'm working from home. So maybe this is my chance to get up off my behind and out from, you know, in front of these computers for a couple of hours a day and, you know, realize that there's two little people that live in my house. Those are my children, and maybe spend some time with them and act like I like them.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, I mean, quite honestly, I do corporate AV work, traveling the country, typically doing very, very large scale conferences, that kind of stuff. And, you know, that's what every one of us traveling road family has said to each other, is like, man, I can't remember the last time I've spent this much uninterrupted time with my family.
Or like, wow, you made dinner? Do you do that when I'm not here?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's like one of my guys that I interviewed not too long ago was a traveling monitor engineer for rock and roll festivals. It was like, so your old lady asked you if you're when you're leaving yet? when's the next gig? Because typically you're gone and you're in my face now.
Yeah. I mean, I feel bad for my wife. She does work in a grocery store, so she has to go to work every single day. And she comes home, and of course, there's a fear that, you know, you could bring something home. So, you know, I still try to act like, okay, well, I care about your well-being. Here's a cup of coffee I made you. Please don't spill it. That's about as much as I can say to her, because she's busting her butt every day. Every day, going to work at no, and plus with me, I work day shift, so I'm working 7 to 3 from home here in our bedroom. So what I'll do is I'll get up at 6 and try to, you know, wake up first, drink my Mountain Dews or try to eat something. So at 6:45, she gets up and she goes to lay down on the couch, and she'll sleep there until she's got to leave for work. And she worked even harder while the kids were still in school, because she would get up when I get up. She would teach the kids. She would lay back down before work, and then she would go to work. She didn't get home till 11. So my wife is the real glue in this house. So when I wanted to have the breakdown, oh, my God, what am I going to do? My show. She goes, look, relax. All right? You'll get it figured out. We'll figure it out. But until then, just relax, okay? Do whatever you need to do. Edit, you know, record with people. Do what you normally do. And maybe if you have to work out a new show title or a new email address for it or whatever, figure it out, and I'm sure you'll do just fine.
Yeah. Yeah, precisely. And like you were saying, to use this as a moment of pause to step back and go, well, maybe there was something about my show that I need to reconsider. If this is an eventuality that could happen, you know, and at that point, like we said in our private conversation, start getting things to the point where you're hosting raw files on your website.
Yeah.
Which is something, and let's go ahead and switch gears into that, because that's something that a lot of people in the podcast industry, I don't think, really grasp. Whenever this first started back in the day, it was literally all via RSS feed and RSS readers. Like nowadays we have app readers, all that kind of stuff that aggregate these literally podcast only RSSs to us. But RSS was used by like news sites, things like that, for people to be able to catch up with news, blogs, that kind of stuff. So as long as you're on a blog friendly format, folks, which I just found out through our conversation privately yesterday, Wix does now support RSS feed. They did not originally, but basically the concept is most of your platforms are going to be providing you with unlimited storage, quote. So as long as you're throwing your episodes in there at like 64 megabit mono or kilobit mono, you know, like AM quality standard, you're going to be just fine, folks. You don't need like stereo wave files. If you're it cracks me up sometimes what people throw out. Like even whenever I start working with people in consultation, it's like, wow, that file is enormous. That's a 30-minute episode, huh?
And I was running about an hour each.
I'm sorry, I lost you there for a second, Jason.
Oh, no, I was saying I was running at about an hour each for my show.
Yeah, yeah, you know, and even that, one of the guys on my network was like, oh, I'm afraid we don't have enough space. And I was like, hey, man, like, I've got 300-something episodes, and some of those are 5 hours long.
Jesus.
You know, like, and I've never had an issue. A couple of times I've had an issue with Pipeline, because too many people were trying to tune in at one time. And you know what? That's a good thing.
Oh, yeah. I don't think that's ever going to be a problem.
Well, and the thing is, a lot of it really comes down to your mentality. I come at a lot of this from whenever I work with bands and musicians, things like that. And like, hey, you want to be a weekend warrior and just go out and have fun, knock around, play some songs, whatever. That's cool. Drink all the beer you want at rehearsal. If you're going to come at this as a business, well, we need to save beer drink until after we're done with rehearsal.
Yeah.
And we need to think about a website. We need to think about branding. We need to think about the name. We need to start doing research as to whether or not that name is taken already. Kind of stacking those things up, and website becomes one of those. And that's really where, as Todd Cochran likes to put it from Blueberry, where you want everybody to do. You want everybody to come to Moonbase Alpha, he says. Like, you want them all to come to one location. So if you're working on a brand, what's funny is if you're putting it out on Anchor or Spotify or anything like that first, that will always and forever be the first thing listed on Google. Just about. Like, it will take you a lot to be able to overtake the Google traffic of something like iTunes, you know, or Anchor, something along those lines. But if your RSS feed is originating at your website and all the posts and descriptions are there first, and then they go out to other places, those other places are actually helping you lift up to the top now.
See, we got to talk more.
So it actively works the opposite way now, because you're at the top of the pyramid. All these other things are matriculating down and building your presence. And it's the fact of, now the internet is like, ooh, look at all the attention that this website gets.
Yeah, well, luckily I was smart enough to have a website put
together.
And that's
just it. And your website is beautiful, by the way.
Thank you.
Make sure to go by and check that out, everybody. It is jaycetheproducer.com, J-A-Y-C-E, theproducer.com. He does all kinds of stuff here, everything from audio and video editing to voiceover, commercial work, video commercials, all kinds of great stuff.
Would you like to hear about something that's not listed on that website that I do?
Yeah.
I also film for the news.
Oh, nice.
So kind of going into the conversation about licensing and having permission to use, I'm what's called a stringer.
Yep.
So I get notified from the app to go out to film a shooting, a fire, or a cop chase, or whatever's in progress. I get the video footage and I upload it to the server. They then sell it, and as soon as it's downloaded, I get paid for it.
Yeah, I and for those of you out there that have videography skills, and you don't necessarily have to have a crazy camera.
No, nope.
All
I use my phone.
Have is a regular good cell phone. Like an up-to-date cell phone. They'll ask you to send in some test footage, things like that. Every once in a while, I'll be driving down the road in Houston, things like that, and I've literally gotten calls from the owner of Stringer.
Yep. Yep.
Like, hey, I notice you're in the area, because, like, you give them access to your GPS. And it's like, I notice you're in the area. There's a bank robbery going on. Can you go get some footage? And I'm like, brother, I am on my way to the dentist right now.
Yeah. Yeah, they'll call you. They'll text you. They'll do whatever. And I feel bad when I have to turn down a request, but then it leads me to ask the question, if I post the footage that I filmed to, let's say, YouTube as an archive of the things that I put together, or an archive of the things that I've actually produced, where, you fade this, you put that up, you make the guy look better, or you let him voice the entire track while he's talking to you, but then you're, overdubbing other film footage. Does that also constitute as a copyright strike since I created it?
Yeah. Yeah. And, it goes so deep, man. It really does. Like, only as an audio engineer, first, it only in the last few years have engineers started actively getting ASCAP BMI royalties and being considered and things like that. Like, imagine, I interviewed the guy that engineered Pearl Jam's 10 on this show.
Ooh.
Brother got paid his day rate.
Not bad at all.
That's it. Like, he got a gold record on the wall years later when someone was like, dude, you never got a gold record? No. He's like, all you got to do is call up and tell him and show him who you are. You'll get a gold record. So he got that. But he doesn't get residual royalties.
No. No, of course not.
And what's funny is that album sounds the way it sounds because of his miking techniques and because of the way he mixed things. So, like, just recently has that even started to come into consideration. Where it's like, hey, what about all these dudes that engineer and master every song in creation? You know, they deserve something a little bit further than their $25 an hour they got in the studio.
And like I said, it's a huge, I mean, disappointment. Yeah, maybe you can call it that. I don't know if I should say it on this. It's a huge kick in the crotch, man.
It really hurts. It's a kick to the tech and the pride nerds, most definitely, because it's one of those, like, it's not like you didn't think about the possibility.
Oh, yeah. No, I thought about it. I thought about it way ahead of time. I recognize the fact that it's an absolute possibility. And I even, as I said, thought that by me waiting for it to air on these stations first before I, you know, posted anywhere or shared anywhere, that was doing at least the right thing. I'm not saying that ignorance is bliss either, but
no.
I also recognize that ignorance of the law is no excuse. But I was considering, okay, well, this is absolutely a possibility. This is something that I should probably at least know, let them get paid first before I document this archive of the show. And that's how I viewed it. I didn't view it as a, oh, this is my podcast and I'm going to make money off of it, et cetera. No, that was always just a side, like, oh, cool, I got $20. That's real nice, you know?
Yeah.
I've never considered it as a business job where I'm going to make money off of this full time.
No. I own a podcast network here, folks, and I, like, own and work for podcastcadet.com, things like that. This is something that you literally have to do, just like making music. I've got literally hundreds of hours of music that I have created. I can't say I've made more than $20-$30 in my life off of it.
Yeah.
It doesn't keep me from continuing to make music. And it cracks me up sometimes. Some of the groups, I believe it was the Underdog podcast community that we met in.
Mm-hmm.
But it cracks me up sometimes. Some of the people in groups where it's like, I'm on episode 5 and I haven't gotten 1,000 listens yet. And I don't know what to do. I'm like, keep making shows?
Yeah, you'll be there a while.
Like, dude, no offense, but you just threw a minnow into the ocean without a GPS tag on it. Did you expect to be able to follow it? You know, like, there's over 1 million podcasts as of January 2020. Over 1 million.
Jesus.
And like, I was having a conversation with the producer before I came home to do this interview. And, you know, it's one of those, broadcast is clamoring to catch up with us.
Yeah.
Right now. And that was before COVID. That was before COVID. Right now, you listen to shows that are, like, produced on your local radio station and the guys are at home and it's like, good God. Without us engineers, you guys are just in a hole, aren't you? Wow.
I've noticed that as well. I've noticed that some of these home studio setups sound absolutely amazing. Well, I'm saying some of the podcasters in their home studios sound
amazing.
Sound fantastic. Like, they're sitting next to you talking to you.
Yeah.
And some of these broadcasters that you have at these, you know, I mean, I hate
Major
to name drop.
Boomers.
I hate to name drop, but look at, like, Elvis Duran. Okay. You can clearly tell when he went from studio to home because of COVID.
Yep.
There's a huge sound difference. There's a huge quality difference.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, God. I mean, thank God I like you.
And, well, and that's just it. And you can't say that, like, your home station, things like that, can't send you home with a microphone.
No. No, and seeing all these people that are losing their jobs because of this, and oh, we don't have the ability to maintain it. How do you not?
Yeah.
I mean, when I first started, Chris, I started with a pair of Walkman headphones.
Yeah.
I started with a Rock Band microphone from the video game.
Yeah.
And I used a baby formula can as a shock mount.
Yeah, man. Nice. Baby formula can and some rubber bands.
That's it.
Pick it.
That's it. And you know what? It worked for the time.
Hey, it's what you got to do. Like, I laugh all the time because the tagline for this show, it doesn't get used much anymore, and I should reboot it now. Because this is like 5 shows in a row that I've used it. But the tagline is, where negative 10 is a number to be desired. And once again, folks, for those that don't know, negative 10 is like RCA line-in home equipment. If that's what it takes to get the sound that you're looking for, use it. You know, you don't have to have professional, amazing equipment to get a good sound. The prime example is like Billie Eilish, dude. She went out and won how many Grammys, and her stuff was recorded 8 feet away from her bed.
Yeah, well, not only that, but one of the sounds that she used for one of her major songs was the sound of the alert for when you walk across the street.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's just it's to the fact of it. It's you that's on display here. And for someone like you to be doing the show that you were doing and have this impact in the way that it has, it's hard. It's really hard. Like we said, it's a kick to the pride, nerds. And it really does make you consider, like, if you're going to keep doing the show in that right, yes, technically you should go out and get an ASCAP use license the same way that like a mobile DJ does. You know, that's literally about the only way that you can cover yourself is to be like, hey, look, I've got an ASCAP use number right here. You know, same as any wedding DJ that goes out and plays music in front of people every week. Same thing as, I mean, that's why most restaurants use Muzak, because otherwise they literally have to buy an ASCAP permit.
Which baffles me, especially because 90% of the time, if you're walking in the mall, you're not listening to the music.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But it's just this crazy, crazy side stream thing. It's really weird. But I've warned more than one person about it. And as soon as I saw it happen to you, I was like, this poor guy, man, let me see what I can do to help him with. Let me see what I can do, what advice I can give him. And like I told you before, man, anything you need, don't hesitate to reach out.
In
this process,
will.
It's a tough one, man.
Any idea how I can carry the 6K listens and I don't know, a couple of hundred followers over?
Yeah.
No, damn it.
And like I said, a 404 error can literally be all they have to do is go put a 1 after your name and keep the page live and just rename the page with like a dot afterward, and you'll get a 404 error. That doesn't mean that your data is gone. Doesn't mean that your page or account is gone. It just means that that page is not accessible. Yeah. Kind of like if you went into your, I think you said you were on Wix. So if you went into your Wix background and changed the link of the page, not the name, but the link down bottom, you could go in and just change it like period at the end of it and hit enter and go try to refresh the page and it'll pop up with a 404. So that's probably all that they've done is go through and put everything on pause until the complaint is settled with RIAA, all that kind of stuff. But the lesson here, folks, is that you could continue. You could keep going. Were you to have the show up on your own site and be hosting it there, then it would be a totally different process to try and stop your stream from that. So that is one of the reasons why people like Todd Cochran and myself are big, big advocates of, if you've already got a web, number one, if you don't have a URL for your podcast and you expect to do this beyond a year, go by a URL. If you're doing this and you aren't considering things beyond a year, heavily consider why you're doing this.
Yeah. 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 Yeah, especially if you're like a weekend warrior, we're like, we'll just talk about the weekend. Sometimes that weekend will wrap around and kick you right in the back of the head when you least expect it.
Yeah.
And then that, you know, maybe monthly show or bi-weekly show will turn into a, now I got to talk about my kid was born or somebody wrecked my car or I had a bad day at work. And it's like, wait a minute, we have a whole lot more to talk about. We're not going to talk about that over an hour because your attention span is that of a goldfish. We'll be back tomorrow, and then tomorrow turns into 2 years from now.
Well, and not just that, Jace, but somebody, especially up against the situation that you're up against right now, like you said, 6,000 listeners.
Yeah.
All that kind of stuff. Like, you weren't somebody without an audience. If you do go rebrand, even if you go and change the style of the show, how many of those will you lose?
Right.
You know?
Most, and if that, not all.
That's just hurtful to think about. And all you can do, hopefully the plus side is, well, I guess most of your followers are hopefully following you on social media platforms.
Yeah.
So they already know what's going on. They're already aware of it. The plus side about running things from your website is at that point you can have a membership form. People can follow your RSS feed. And you can send out, you can put up a blog. Hey, this happened, everybody. We're reformatting. Look for us under this name. So that's kind of the plus side about doing things under your own URL is that you have the option to directly reach your audience like that without having to go through another platform.
Fortunately,
you do have the social media platforms at your disposal, and you do have that loyal following that checks that out and everything else. So Godspeed to you, man. It's such a hard situation to be in. Thank you for coming on and talking so openly and honestly about it.
And thank you for having me and kind of let me vent for a few.
Hey, man, it's understandable. Like I said, as a former on-air engineer, someone who's done what you do, someone who goes out, speaks at conferences, sits on panels, things like that. Like it's a tough row to hoe. And like even whenever I started my show, Dudes and Beer, for the first 6 months, maybe even a year almost. Okay, maybe not a year, but for at least the first 6 months, I used regular roll-in music every week.
Yeah,
I didn't care. I didn't give two sticks, you know. It was like, yeah, we're coming in with Dr. John. How you doing, everybody? You know, it was like, no, you can't do that.
No.
You can't do that.
Nope.
So good on you for trying your best to adhere to the system, to go through the system, to put your show through the system. So sorry to hear that things have been hit in the way that they are. But the whole purpose for having you on is to let other people know, like, this will happen.
Oh yeah, consequences are real.
And that's what I keep telling people is, it ain't, we're 160 episodes deep. It ain't happened yet. It's like keep your head on a swivel.
Mm-hmm.
Because when it happens, you will get zero warning.
Oh yeah,
you will wake up to a red screen and an email.
I woke up to two of them.
Yeah,
two of them.
And like my story is as a musician, whenever COVID started, me and my wife, because we own a live AV company, did kind of like a hour long live show where it was like comedians and sketch comedy and live musicians, all kinds of stuff, like a variety show of people that were impacted and without their industry due to this pandemic. Really cool 5 week limited series. I provided the intro music as myself, no disassemble. I own the rights to my music, folks. I am a ASCAP registered, BMI registered composer, musician, and publishing house. Show ended. Oh, I also had a like 3 minute long video just to promote my new album in the show. Why not? Shameless I am. So the show went on. Show ended. 15 minutes later, I get an alert from Facebook. Big red screen on my video. Your video is becoming available to a BMI ASCAP conflict.
And the problem is it's so hard to submit proof.
Oh, no. The best part was 3 seconds later, I got an email from BMI and ASCAP. Your content has been used from somebody on Facebook. Do they have permission?
Well, I'm saying, like, even as in my shoes at this point, as a personality or whatever you want to call it, I guess for FM purposes, you call it a personality. But as a personality, pretty much the songs that are played are covered, you know.
Yeah.
So it's so hard for me to submit proof to them to say, no, you have to contact our legal department, or no, we're not sending emails, Mr. Schweiger. You need to send. I what the hell do I need to send emails for? I did my job.
Yeah. Literally, my job.
I did what I was told to do.
Yeah.
And it's so hard to submit proof. And even if you have a license, let's say under an internet radio station, it's so difficult to actually get that information to them because they have all their legal loopholes and hula hoops you got to jump through that are flaming. Oh, and you're covered in gasoline at the same time.
Yeah.
It's so hard to submit proof to these people to say, look, I'm covered under this with this station, and then I'm covered under the FM stations and several internet radio stations. So why am I going to ask 18 people for their licensing information? This has been paid 18 times.
Yeah.
Why are you coming down the personality's throat? What the hell did I do?
Yep. And that's just it. It's gotten that way with YouTube now. YouTube has already come out and basically said that if you aren't to the monetization level by the time that you would be available for monetization, you know, where it's like you got to have a show for 6 months, you got to have this much time watched, you got to have this many subscribers, all that kind of stuff. If you don't meet all those criteria by the point of monetization, your account could be raised from the internet at any point.
Yeah, and that's scary because, you know, what if
it is.
You know, you have family that are in different parts of the state or the country or whatever, and this is how they get on and they get to see their grandkids or nieces or nephews if I put a stupid, silly video up on YouTube of them having
Grandma and Poughkeepsie gets to see the ballet concert.
Yeah, or a stupid blind pillow fight, which that was fun to do with my kids. You should try it if you ever have a chance. Just watching the two of them swing pillows at nothing.
These three, I think that would be too advantageous.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, if I don't reach a particular level, I'm not in this for the level, man. I'm in this to just document and keep an archive of it. And you're telling me that there's a fear that one day everything could be gone because of what?
Yeah. Yeah. And like I said, how many hours of your life and work and interviews, and time that you spent getting to know people, were spent putting that show on and putting that out there. And it's not that you don't have an archive. It's that all the work that you've done and put into it is gone now.
Yeah.
And may not be recoverable. We don't know yet. Please do keep in touch with me as things go on.
Luckily, I have an extension on my web browser that will allow me to download a mess of anything that's on a particular web page. I was able to go to Overcast before they shut me out of it and download every one of my episodes.
Oh, fantastic. Great workaround. I myself have had to go and rebuild an entire 50-page website from the internet internet Wayback Engine.
Yeah. Yeah. That's where I started yesterday. That's where I started yesterday. I'm like, oh, it's going to suck so bad.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's just it. Like, just knowing what that is a daunting task in and of itself. And just so you know, folks, if you're out there, if you're creating, if you're doing shows like this, make sure to stop on by and check out Breach.tv. They are a great, great growing platform. We've had them on this show a couple times on my Dudes and Beer show a couple times, but they're a YouTube type platform out of Austin here. They're looking at an FM version as well, where basically anyone that joins up in the music category or podcast category, the audio from your video would be stripped and immediately copied over to a mirror account. Really cool. They have like monetization options better than most platforms that I've been on. We're monetized with them through our network. Their payout is great. Nice. They are growing as far as platform subscribers, users, things like that. But they have gone through, for all you DJs, musicians, people like your show, Jace, The Shuffle, they've gone through and preemptively made agreements with ASCAP, BMI, Rumblefish, all of those platforms before they were created and got monetization. And we're like, listen, we want creators to be able to put up whatever the hell they want. So if somebody's like, you know, putting up their family photos to, you know, We Are Family by Sister Sledge, it's not going to be muted.
Right.
Let's just give Sister Sledge part of their monetization.
I like that idea.
And yeah. And they'll just give you, it's great. It's beautiful. So go by and check it out. Like I said, Hungry Growing Platform, it's been really good for us the last couple of years, the promotion that we've done with it, things like that. But for creators like DJs, musicians, that kind of stuff, it really is going to be the next step. Because like me and this producer were saying in our private conversation earlier today, they're going to have to do something. They're going to have to start selling people like quarterly licenses or monthly licenses or something. There's just people out there doing Facebook streams out the wazoo.
Yeah.
How are you going to keep up with it? How many RIAAs are you going to put out there?
And that's the trouble, is that I've heard a lot of bad news when it comes to some of these all-encompassing platforms that will allow you to have it, like stream licensing.
Yeah.
And I heard stream licensing was not paying out as they were supposed to, and then with no warning, and the people that had stream licensing were getting hit.
Well, and not just that, but how compliant are their stats? Are they IAB compliant?
Yeah.
All that kind of stuff. All hugely important, especially whenever you're looking at somebody who is hosting your content. And that's really where the root of this lies, I think, is the self-hosting. The self-hosting, I think, really becomes the ultimate solution where, once again, you're, as Todd says, having people dial home to Moonbase Alpha for everything. And it really does kind of set that precedent. It lets you control via having an email list built as people sign up, all that kind of stuff. And it really does kind of protect you from situations like the attractivity of Anchor. It's not that all the shows on my network are not distributed on Anchor. They absolutely are. They were all on Wooshka too, the original Anchor.
Oh,
which is a caveat that most people aren't looking at whenever, because I see it a lot in the groups where it's like, go to Anchor, it's free. Wooshka was free too. And they've pretty much shown the fact that that is not a sustainable model.
No.
The only way that happens is they own your content.
Right.
Right. And that's dangerous. That's if you're out there creating, making your own stuff, branding your own stuff. I saw an article just the other day about a couple of people that were upset because they took a show to Gimlet Media. Gimlet Media said, yeah, we'll produce the show. And then they tried taking it somewhere and they were like, no, what are you doing? That's our show. And it's like, well, yeah, like you can't just walk off with the show. You pitched the show to a media group. Like if you wanted to avoid that, you should have concept the show, buy a website, put up two or three episodes, then take it to Gimlet. Because then you own the URL and the site. Yep. and the source. But instead they went the opposite way and now cannot separate that show from Gimlet.
Yeah, well.
And it's a reality, and it's something that in this literal right now, we're in the equivalent of 1998 again, but for podcasts. If you remember what the internet world was like in 1998 with URLs and website buying and things like that, it's very much the same thing right now, except it's podcasts. And I'm afraid that there's going to be a little bit of a bubble burst with quite a few people when they start having to pay for hosting, getting hosting out. When conglomerates start kind of doing what they're doing, which is scooping up other podcast companies and putting them under major umbrellas.
Well, and then the problem is, what happens to your rights then? Well, you know, what happens to your ownership?
At that point, you're basically working for Clear Channel, folks. You got one of two choices. It's Clear Channel or Cox Media Group. One of the two. Which you want to be on AM or FM, whichever one you want. That's your choices.
I didn't mean to laugh, but I recently follow what just happened with a bunch of my friends over at iHeart, and I'm like, oh, God.
But, yeah, as an engineer, you understand that. It's true.
It's true. Yeah, absolutely.
It doesn't matter. You could be like, oh, I hate that guy, blah, blah, blah. Oh, I'm glad he switched stations. You know it's still the same owners, right?
No, yeah.
That's why he was able to just switch stations and keep the show. That's also why, you know, Howard Stern left years ago and saw the path and saw the light and said, if I want to keep doing my show the way that my audience likes my show, I need to just have my own satellite channel.
Yep.
And not worry about any of this, which is kind of the equivalent, folks, of going out and having your own URL. At that point, you are the Howard Stern. You can do whatever you want. If somebody doesn't want to allow their allow your show on their platform, so be it. Refuse my RSS. I'll submit it to the 85 other thousand platforms. You know? But it's not the fact that you were then dependent on one of them to be able to get your show out there.
True.
So you could still be sharing episodes via social media, all that kind of stuff. So thank you once again, Jace, for coming on, for talking about this, for being so open, so lighthearted about such a drastic situation.
Thank you for having me. And again, this is my therapy. You know, getting behind a microphone is my therapy, I feel. And thank you for letting me get that out for a little bit and use words to describe situations that a lot of people may one day see themselves in. And I hope you fix it before you do. But if you do, you might be listening to this, and I hope you realize at the end of the day, it's fixable. You may have to make some changes, but at the end of the day, give it talk to Chris, because Chris definitely knows what the hell he's doing. He's going to help guide me where I need to be.
Well, thank you so much, man. I greatly appreciate that endorsement. Make sure to tell everybody. I'd love to say, make sure to tell them what platforms they can go check you out on, Jace.
Yeah.
But tell them where they can go to acquire your services as an editor, as a voiceover talent, video producer, all that kind of stuff.
JaceTheProducer.com is the primary source for everything at this point, and will be in the future, thanks to you. But JaceTheProducer.com, of course, there's a chat box on there. There's a form you can fill out. What exactly are you looking for? How would you like to see it? What kind of feel would you like for it? I've made commercials for FM radio stations. I make intros for podcasts. I can mix just about anything. I mean, I don't have to know anything about it. Just help me see your vision, and I'll make your vision a possibility.
That's what I like to hear right there, folks. Make sure to go on by and check out JaceTheProducer.com. That is J-A-Y-C-E, TheProducer.com. Jace, please do hold the line while we close things out here for our audience. Great stuff there from Jace today, everybody. Please, please, God, use that as a caveat whenever you're considering starting a show, thinking about a show, looking at doing a show. You really do have to take these things into consideration every single time, all the time. It's a repetitive process, but man, is it such a necessary one. And the situation that Jace has run into with the RIAA compliance just shows that. So thank you so much to him for coming on. Make sure to go by JaceTheProducer.com to check everything out. Make sure to stop on by audibletrials.com/talkingsound to get your 30 days free of Amazon's Audible. While you're online doing that, stop on by Talking Sound Show. Stop on by it's Universal Network. Until next time, take care of yourself. Take care of your hearing. Keep reaching for 11. We'll talk to you soon, everybody. Bye-bye.
This is Talking Sound.